Hello, I'm Camille Ross. This is number 0182, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0182. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet actress Robin Weigert. Best known for playing Calamity Jane on HBO's Deadwood, she brings another old West woman to life in the audiobook The Whip. She became familiar with Charlie Parkhurst only after accepting the role.
It was a real page-turner. Her life is absolutely fascinating. She defied the odds in every possible way, really. She somehow survived on her own, and she was, you know, orphaned, and she had everything was stacked against her, and she suffered a number of tragedies.
Marcus Melliton Jr. is the author of Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. He's here to talk about Dump Your Significant Jerk Week, which is the week before Valentine's Day. Why is that the right time to dump a jerk?
How many times have you seen someone hang on to a relationship because they just need to get through Valentine's Day and be able to go to the parties? And it doesn't end up well. That's the people that are in the big fight in the middle of the party. They didn't really want to be there with each other. They're just trying to squeak through that one last Valentine's Day before they break up.
Brant Cooper is the co-author of The Lean Entrepreneur.
I think existing businesses need to be more entrepreneurial in order to be closer to their customer and provide value. And I think that becoming an entrepreneur is a way for both those that are employed and those that are not employed to improve their life and become empowered in the workplace.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0182, is the lovely, the talented Camille Ross. She's the host of Global Montreal's The Morning News, seen weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. on, you guessed it, Global Montreal, the other place that I work. And thank you very much, Camille, for taking the time to do the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. A program also brought to you on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, when Alvin Rogers, age 33, of Painter, Virginia, appeared in court for his second time, his second offense of shoplifting, he brought his church pastor with him. The minister told the judge that Rogers was very active in the church and even helped out with remodeling and cooking and was, quote, trying to turn his life around. Well, Northampton Circuit Court Judge Glenn A. Tyler didn't buy it, noting that he had been jailed 11 times in his life already. Unfortunately, I have seen him here in this courtroom almost as often as the pastor has seen him in his church, the judge said, sentencing Rogers to spend weekends in jail. Okay, now jail rules require weekend inmates to bring two pairs of underwear. On his way to check in, Rogers shoplifted two pairs of underwear and was promptly caught and brought back before Judge Tyler for his third offense of shoplifting. Now, under Virginia law, a third offense of shoplifting is a felony, so Tyler sentenced Rogers to 5 years in prison, with half that time suspended. Yeah. Well, you know, he's gonna need a lot more underwear. And a judge declared a mistrial in a Philadelphia courtroom when an alleged assault victim's prosthetic eye popped out while he was testifying and startled jurors. John Huddick, age 48, was sitting in the witness stand crying about the loss of his left eye that happened when he was allegedly trying to break up a bar fight in August of 2011 when the fake eye popped out and he caught it in his hand. The jurors gasped. Matthew Brunelli, age 23, is alleged to have punched Huddick in the eye with a car key between his fingers. Defense lawyer Eileen Hurley alleges Brunelli didn't use a weapon and was acting in self-defense. Hurley demanded a mistrial in the aggravated assault case, as she said the eye-popping accident could have caused the jury to, quote, have undue sympathy, unquote, for the alleged victim and undue prejudice against the accused. Believe it or not, they got a new trial. So now the new trial date is set for March the 4th. Well, that certainly brings new meaning to eye-popping testimony, doesn't it? Okay, it's time for another edition of the Redneck Chronicles, this time presenting the Tennessee edition. We have three bona fide rednecks to share with you. Cue the music. Number one, Timothy Crabtree, age 45, of Rogersville, was arrested in October and charged with stabbing his son, Brandon, age 21, in an argument over who would get the last beer in the house. Number two, Trisha Moody, age 26, was charged with DUI in Knoxville in January after a 10-minute police chase. The officer's report noted that Moody was still holding a cup of beer and apparently had not spilled a single drop during the chase. Number three, Jerry Poe, age 62, was charged in a road rage incident in Clinton on Black Friday after firing his handgun at a driver in front of him to scare her into moving faster, he said. Poe said he had started at midnight at one Walmart, waited in line unsuccessfully for 5 hours for a sale price stereo, and was on his way to another Walmart. Because, as you know, everything happens at Walmart. Or, in this case, happens in between Walmarts. And that's your Redneck Chronicles. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Thomas P. Lowe, age 58, a lawyer in Burnsville, Minnesota, agreed to represent a woman from his North Dakota hometown in a divorce case. He'd known her for many years, and a few days into their new professional relationship, he suggested adding a sexual relationship, too. She agreed. But after she argued with him about his marriage and their affair, Lowe ended both their sexual and their professional relationship and sent her a bill for both. Listing on the bill, as if he'd spent the time working on her case, was the time they spent without briefs, if you know what I mean. Lowe admitted the misconduct and has been suspended from practicing for at least 15 months. Now, language to the contrary in numerous authoritative volumes of lawyer jokes notwithstanding, screwing your client and prostituting yourself are not, in fact, consistent with prevailing standards of professional conduct for attorneys, just in case you were wondering. And by the way, I wonder if his wife is now looking for a divorce lawyer of her own. Just a thought. Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Actress Robin Weigert is best known for her role as Calamity Jane in HBO's Deadwood. She also has a recurring role as attorney Allie Lowen on the hit FX series Sons of Anarchy. But she is also narrating the audiobook The Whip, written by Karen Kondazian, which is based on the true story of Charlotte Charlie Parkhurst, a woman who spent 30 years living her life as a man in the Old West. Robin joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Robin.
Hi, how are you?
I'm just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Tickety-boo.
you have a knack of finding roles and portraying very strong, independent women, from Calamity Jane to Charlie Parkhurst. Is this something you do by luck or design?
I think there's a bit of both. I love characters who have a strength of character and sort of take on difficult circumstances and in the case of both of these, sort of come up with interesting and creative solutions to difficult situations, because I feel like they let us reflect upon our own lives in a way. You know, when you see a character in extremis and you see them somehow work it out, you know, I think it gives an audience an interesting touch point for their own struggles in their own life, and I feel those characters kind of turn me on. I like them, you know.
Charlie Parkhurst was a real woman that a lot of people don't know a lot about. Were you familiar with her before taking on this?
Not
role?
Before I read Karen's book, no. And it was a real page turner. I mean, her life is absolutely fascinating, and she defied the odds in every possible way, really. She somehow survived on her own, and she was, you know, orphaned, and she had everything was stacked against her, and she suffered a number of tragedies. Some of them Karen imagined, and some of them she researched. And I think anytime you're looking at a character from that era, and this was true for Calamity Jane as well, it's going to be a combination of truth and fiction, because things weren't perfectly documented back then. And especially when somebody's lived an unusual life like that, there's a certain mythology that grows up around them, and they become fictionalized even during their own era. So she did a kind of interesting job of excavating and inventing at the same time and creating a very rich landscape. Some of the research she did was just simply to do with what life was like then. And she has a lot of detail around things like how corsets were fastened up and the buttons buttoned, and, you know, what this and that might have smelled like and tasted like. It's a very sensual book, full of imagined, rich detail. And you can sort of feel that it might have been written by an actor, because you can tell she's imagined herself inside all of those experiences, and brought a lot of her own life experience to it as well, I think.
Well, the fact that it's written by an actor, it must be a testament to you, because, I mean, here's a woman who's written this character, knows her inside out. She could have done the audiobook.
I know. What an honor. She probably would have been marvelous at it. And she actually wrote a character that I think, whatever it would be 15 years ago, she would have played. I'm guessing at her age, I don't know, but this sort of really passionate Italian actress, and Karen could play Italian in a heartbeat. I think with her last name Kandazian, she's actually, what is that?
Armenian.
Thank you. That's the word I was searching for. But she feels Italian, and she wrote a character, I think, almost for herself at the time she started it, who is just a wonderful counterpoint to Charlie, and is in a lot of the book. And the dynamic between them was a lot of fun to play. Some of my favorite stuff to do in the audiobook, which was the scenes between those two, because it's switching back and forth between such extreme opposites. And a lot of fun.
In doing an audiobook, you have to do all the characters, basically. You are a trained stage actress. Is this putting all your training to the test in doing an audiobook?
You know, it taps into a lot of different things that are in your grab bag, I guess I would say, as an actor. And it's a challenge that's very, very specific to this medium and unlike anything else I'd ever tried to do before. And I think what I was just describing is a big part of it. It's the fact that you're having to switch back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And sometimes you're doing scenes that have six characters in them, and you have to keep them all not just at the tip of your tongue, because they all have a different sound from each other so that the listener can hear the differences amongst the characters, but you also have to keep them in your heart and feel the differences in where they're coming from. So it's a little bit like I think it's some hybrid between being an actor and being a director, because you're needing to be on top of the scene, looking down at it and kind of orchestrating it, as well as inside of it, because you're painting the scenery with the descriptive passages, and then you're embodying the people when you step into their dialogue, and it's really wonderful. I sort of recommend it to any actor. It's a wonderful exercise. It uses a lot of different muscles.
Is this the first audiobook you've done?
Yes, it is.
Because
I'd love to do more. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Because we know you from television. We know you from cable. You've done stage. Is this almost like a different muscle for you when you step behind the mic to read an audiobook? Is that totally different from what you've done before?
Yeah, I mean, they're all, of course, related, and they're in sort of a constellation. I mean, they're all related to each other. And I think the more you can stretch through whatever medium, the more you have to bring to all the others. So I feel like there was something I took from this exercise that I can probably bring to other things that I do, especially if I ever did direct, which is something that's always been of interest to me but a little intimidating to me. I think that this as an exercise would be very useful for that, because you're keeping many characters in you at once, not just the one character whose arc you're following. Yes, it's a book about Charlie Parkhurst, but you have to be everybody in the story. And so you have to hold the whole story inside of you at the same time, which I think is a director's art. You know, when there's a good director, they are all the characters at once. They carry the story inside their body, you know. So I think that's what it would most closely pertain to later, maybe in my life sometime.
You are best known for playing a woman of the Old West, an infamous woman of the Old West, in Deadwood on television. If you had the opportunity to bring Charlie Parkhurst either to the small or big screen, would you like to do it now that you've done the audiobook?
You know, I find her fascinating, and it would be a really interesting challenge to do that. Yes, I mean, the character is so strongly suggested by Jane, and of course I don't want to tread the same ground, but I do think there are enough differences that I could find something very interesting to play there. And I think it's a story that deserves to be made into a movie, because it's a fascinating story, and it's a very American story. I think that Charlie was the first woman to vote, although she voted as a man. But there are at least some who believe that she may be the first to have actually gotten her, slipped her vote in there, because she was passing at the time. And that's an interesting historical tidbit as well. I think she's a sort of standalone character in history, and her story deserves to be told. So maybe Karen will someday write the script. Be very interesting.
And since you've now played these two women of the Wild West, and from two very different perspectives, how do you think you would have survived in that time yourself? In other words, how different are you from the two characters you're now best known for?
Well, I think that there were, sadly, only three alternatives back then. One was to attach yourself in some form to a man in marriage, or at least to have a kind of companion who could take you through, because you needed male protection. Or you could be, a lot of women became who didn't manage to get married would end up becoming ladies of the night and, you know, prostitutes, and even there they'd be attached to somebody who would be their pimp or, you know, whatever that was. So that was, you know, path number two. And this, it presents itself as the third alternative. I mean, truly, women did not have a lot to stand on their own back then. So what could one do as a woman alone, besides try to sort of make it as a man yourself? And I think Karen had done some research that certainly suggested that there were many, many more of these women in disguise than these few figures who've become sort of iconic. There were many, many more of them sort of around, because it was option three. It was option three, you know. If you couldn't get yourself an attachment that would provide you with enough of a shield or protection, you sort of didn't have a choice but to try to rough it in that way. You're asking me what I would have done. I think, you know, I think had I not been able to marry somehow, for whatever combination of reasons, this might have been an option to try to see if I could do something like that. But probably I would have tried to see if I could attach myself to somebody who had social position. I mean, I probably would have been a more cowardly type of woman. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how I would have made it. In other words, you're talking about people who did not come from social advantage, and who were, or both of these characters, orphaned young, or in Calamity's case, I think probably just ran away from an abusive home or something like that in Jane's case. But in this other character's case was orphaned. And, you know, so from that place, you have very few options. And it's probably true today as well. But, you know, society's set up a little bit differently now. But it's interesting to imagine, isn't it? I mean, just what it would have been like to be a woman, period, back then. How many compromises you would have to make and what form they would take. And there really is, there was really no perfect way. There were just people who did their best. So.
Well, you certainly brought them to life.
Yeah.
First with Calamity Jane on HBO's Deadwood, and now with Charlie Parkhurst in the book, yep, The Whip. I thank you very, very much, Robin,
thank
for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, it's a pleasure, and thanks for talking. I appreciate it.
Actress Robin Weigert. The audiobook is called The Whip, written by Karen Kondazian. You can find the audiobook at audible.com and also on amazon.com. And you can go to my website, to thestufffile.com, to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0182, and you'll find the links. You'll also find links to Robin's website.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Viewer discretion is advised. But then again, why are you staring at a radio program?
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about Dump Your Significant Jerk Week, and we'll learn about the lean entrepreneur. Plus, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. But right now, we have more Stuff File news for you here on The Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Julie Griffiths, age 43, of Newcastle-under-Lyme, England, received her first antisocial behavior order back in 1999 for too loudly berating her husband, Norman, who one neighbor told the Daily Telegraph is the sweetest man you could ever meet. After many complaints from neighbors, never complaints, by the way, from Norman, Griffiths was fined the equivalent of about $700 in 2010 and vowed to be quieter. The complaints hardly slowed, and in July of 2012, environmental health officials installed monitoring equipment next door and caught Griffiths venting at Norman 47 times in 3 months. However, the Stoke-on-Trent Magistrates Court merely issued a new 5-year antisocial behavior order. That's all they did. You know how this ends, don't you? Yeah. One day, sweet, wonderful Norman is going to snap, and suddenly the house will be real quiet. Remember that other Norman that dealt with an overbearing woman in his life? He had a hotel, I believe. Yeah. Just saying. Authorities in Florida say a man was hospitalized with burn wounds after accidentally shooting himself in the groin with a flare gun. The Lee County Sheriff's Office said deputies responded to a medical assistance call in Lehigh Acres and arrived to find Jorge Perez, age 23, with multiple burns and lacerations on his genital region. Now, Perez told deputies he had loaded the flare gun and set it down. He later picked it up and forgotten that he had apparently loaded it and fired it into the ground. The man said the flare bounced off the floor and struck him in the genitals. As I've always said, and probably every other announcer you've ever heard, if you ever experience a burning sensation in the genital region, call your doctor. Moving right along, twin brothers Eric Hale and Sean Hale, age 28, were both arrested on New Year's Eve in Manchester, Connecticut, after fighting each other at a hotel and later at a residence. Police said a 27-year-old woman was openly dating the two men and that Sean thought it was his turn and asked Eric for privacy. Eric begged to differ about whose turn it was. Okay, I know I said that the woman was openly dating the two men, according to this report, but really, what I need to know is, did she actually know she was dating twins? I'm just asking. Okay, when she started saying her ex-boyfriend was texting her, we took it very seriously, said Chief K.P. Gibson of the Crowley, Louisiana Police Department. Apparently, the text messages got more and more aggressive, and Trudy Miller, age 34, said she was afraid of him. The only problem, Miller's ex-boyfriend swore he didn't own the cell phone the text messages were coming from. Police dug a little deeper and traced the offending phone to Miller herself. Over 30 threatening text messages received on Miller's phone had in fact been sent to Miller's phone by Miller herself, the chief said. Her apparent motive? If the boyfriend was jailed, Miller hoped she would get custody of their two children. She was arrested on felony charges of swearing out a false report. Well, at least the boyfriend won't have too much trouble proving she's an unfit mother. And while we're on the subject of parents in this last story in the Stuff File News section before we get to our next guest, William Providence, age 42, was arrested in Jefferson County, Montana in December and charged with waterboarding four boys, two of whom were his own sons, at his home in December. Also, in January, Kirill Bartashevich, age 52, was charged with making terroristic threats to his high school-age daughter after he allegedly pointed his new AK-47 at her because her report card showed two B's instead of all A's. He said he had recently purchased the gun because he feared that President Obama intended to ban them. Yeah. Did he actually pass a background check? Wow. The story of these two parents reminds me of the fact that anybody can be a parent, but you need a license to get a dog. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Of course, the cold month of February has a heartwarming day smack dab in the middle of it, Valentine's Day. But what about the week leading up to it? Well, February 6th to the 13th is Dump Your Significant Jerk Week. On the line to talk about it, we have a return visit from Marcus Melliton Jr., the author of Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. He joins us from Houston, Texas. Hi, Marcus.
Glad to be back.
Thanks for being on the program with us once again. So, Dump Your Significant Jerk Week. You'd think that it would be the other way around. There are a lot of people out there who don't want to be alone on Valentine's Day. You'd think Dump the Jerk Week might be the week after.
Yeah, you're right, and that's a good point, because I wanted to bring that up. We came about this through really the back door. I write satire, and I wrote a book called Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. And in that, I'm teaching guys how to become the jerk that, women search for, you know, so that they can marry Sandra Bullock. So that was something that I was doing. But I had women who would read it, and they would complain, you describe the guy I'm dating. What do I do about it? And I said, he's worthless to you. You should get rid of him. And then it came down to, well, when should you really get rid of somebody? And we ended up with Valentine's Day.
And why Valentine's Day? I have another date in mind, but why Valentine's?
Well, how many times have you seen someone hang on to a relationship because they just need to get through Valentine's Day and be able to go to the parties?
Right.
Yeah, you know? And it doesn't end up well. That's the people that are in the big fight in the middle of the party, you know, because they didn't really want to be there with each other. They're just trying to squeak through that one last Valentine's Day before they break up. So there was that aspect of it. You know, for the guys, you know, they've got a woman that doesn't appreciate them, and they buy them things. And Valentine's Day, you spend lots of money, and you worship at her feet, you know, for Valentine's Day, and it was a waste. You know, she didn't really, wasn't that interested. She'd rather be with somebody else, or she doesn't appreciate you. You shouldn't have to go through that that kind of abuse, that neglect.
Well, you see, that's why I have another date in mind. I'm going back even further. I think the last day of November, because what happens is you get locked into the expense of Christmas. And if it's not, if the relationship is not working out, you're locked in at Christmas and you're still trapped for Valentine's.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's a good day, too. It just seemed like Valentine's Day, but right before. Because, you know, Valentine's Day is a day for great relationships, you know, where you can, you can take your mate and your spouse and do something special and enjoy what you've got. But if there's not anything there, you should get out. And so that's when you need to do it. You know, if you're it's time for, you know, spring cleaning a little bit early. Let's clean out the house. Let's get rid of this guy and go out and do something else for Valentine's Day. Go out with some friends, maybe connect up with somebody you should be with, or something like that. But don't make Valentine's Day into a farce.
Okay, now there's a bit of a gender bias here. And the reason why I say that is, you know, you're describing the idea of the appropriate time to dump a jerk, basically. What you're saying is women can dump men just before Valentine's Day. But should a guy want to be the dumper as opposed to the dumpee, well, then he's even a bigger jerk, isn't he?
Well, for guys, for certain guys, this is when, you know, you realize that you're doing everything in this relationship. And it's kind of like this this goddess-servant relationship that you're in. You're spending lots of money. You're taking her to places. She's never satisfied. It's never quite good enough. And you always have this feeling that if some, you know, bad boy shows up, or the guy that she talks about that she, you know, had so much trouble with, who's so much of a jerk, she would go right back to that guy if she had an opportunity. There's no reason for a guy to stay in that. And for the guy, this is the expensive point. You know, you're going into Valentine's Day. You're expected to buy things and do things. And I've had guys literally get dropped right after Valentine's Day because the payoff was complete.
Yeah. I've seen that too.
Yeah. You know, it's like you don't want to quit a job right before Christmas because you get all those free holidays. Why would you do that?
Exactly. So how long has Dump Your Significant Jerk Week been around? I understand this is like the 19th year?
Yeah. Well, when I put the book out initially, Nice Guys Don't Get Laid, back in, 1985 or 6. It was just a small printed out book. And then I got so much demand from that, I ended up on Geraldo Montel Williams, and I completely re-edited the book, put it out again, sold out of it again a couple of times with some reprints, and then put it out again back in 2009. And this time I doubled up the size of it again. So it's gone for like 19 years. And we started this based on the Geraldo shows and the others when we started getting phone calls on these radio shows saying, you're describing my boyfriend. You're teaching men to become like my boyfriend. And I do it as a joke because it's satire. It's like, you know, does a guy really need to get a drinking and a drug problem to attract women? Well, maybe. But maybe they shouldn't. Maybe there's bad downsides to that, you know, or become a jerk or verbally abusive so that they can, be someone that the woman has to strive to impress or strive to, show better in front of him. Those are bad aspects that guys have used to keep women. So this all came about because of that, is that if guys are going to be like that, maybe women should drop them. And so it was the night. So we started that. After all the advertising, the shows and everything, was okay, women, if you don't like guys to be like this, then get rid of them. And now, here's when you do it.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're married, correct?
I am. Okay. I have four kids.
And you have four kids. So I'm assuming you're
along, okay.
I'm assuming your wife is very understanding about what you do and this book. But what does your wife's friends say? I mean, you know, she's the guy who's married to she's the woman mm-hmm. who's married to the guy, rather, who writes Nice Guys Don't Get Laid.
Oh yeah, sometimes we kind of call each other on it. You know, is that sometimes women are their most happy when they're unhappy. Is that when the relationship's not going good, then there's some excitement about trying to hang on to the relationship. And sometimes it seems like the more I do, the more bored she becomes with the relationship.
You know, the type of woman you just described is there's a guy who's like that too, the house flipper. You know, you buy mm-hmm. a house, you fix it up, and then you let it go.
Yeah.
Are women doing the same thing?
You know, there was a book written on women who were attracted to alcoholics, and if the guy ever literally quit drinking and it was obvious he would never do it again, she would leave him. And it was very common. And this psychologist who wrote the book, it was called Women Who Love Too Much, it was difficult for her to convince them that they finally achieved what they wanted, and it's very rare that happens, and they should stick with him. But they became bored. There was no... See, they look at a guy as like a project. I'm going to fix him. He has all these problems, and I'm going to fix those things. And they had to pass over good guys, guys that had good jobs, were dependable, you know, would be great in a relationship, would stick with you, was loyal, and all those kind of things. But she would end up, you know, getting the alcoholic guy or a guy who loses his jobs and, you know, And so it's the fixer-upper that they want to fix. So we kind of joke about that, and then she's got friends, you know, and it's the same thing. And I would give her advice for her friends, you know, if I'd meet their date or their boyfriend, and then they would kind of depend on me to give them feedback. Is he really what they think he is?
You know, I find it interesting. You mentioned Sandra Bullock earlier. So let's talk about some of the guys. Jesse James, her ex. John Edwards, Chris Brown, these are the guys that are the poster boys for jerks.
Look who Katy Perry married.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, it's and the reason I like to use those as examples is because it's easy to take a woman that maybe doesn't have a lot of money or a lot of influence or a lot of power or anything, and they end up accepting a guy who's a jerk or who's a problem, you know? So it's much better to take someone who's got everything and can make a choice among men who they go out with. You know, Katy Perry, Sandra Bullock, they had a selection of men they could have made, and look who they chose. And how could you have that vast number of men you could have gone to, and you choose a Jesse James, a guy who had a really bad reputation. Everyone knew what he was like, you know. Katy Perry, what was the guy that she married? I mean, he's got lots of problems. He had a heroin problem. I mean,
Russell Brand?
Just, what's that?
Russell Brand.
Yes. I mean, I read an article on him. He's just full of problems, you know. And she could have had her choice among men, and this is what she chose. She chose a project. You know, Sandra Bullock chose a project. Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, how in the world did she choose him, you know, for a husband? She had many people she could have selected, and he was known for what he ended up doing.
Yeah. Interesting concept indeed. So, again, February 6th to 13th, Dump Your Significant Jerk Week. People can also find out more information about your book, which we've talked about in the past, Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. They can also go to your website, which I believe is sharkbaitpress.com, correct?
That's correct.
Marcus, I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again. Glad that you are still happily married with four kids and everything's working out fine.
Oh, it is. And so for Valentine's Day, you people that have a good relationship, enjoy it. If you have a bad relationship, this is the time to get out of it.
That's some good advice. Marcus Melitin Jr., author of Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. You can visit my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0182, and you'll find links to Marcus's site, which is sharkbaitpress.com, and also links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. As we mark Abraham Lincoln's birthday this week, millions of Americans have a much better understanding of this great leader's political skills because of the hit movie now in theaters. Later this month, we'll find out how many Academy Awards the movie wins. But today, we have another award for Mr. Lincoln. It's the Center for America Lifetime Achievement Award for Outstanding Contributions to the Law. Lincoln was a great lawyer, and he gave the best advice about lawsuits I've ever heard. He said, and I quote, "Discourage litigation. Persuade your neighbors to compromise whenever you can. Point out to them how the nominal winner is often a real loser in fees, expenses, and waste of time." End of quote. Now, let's be fair. Lincoln knew people will have disputes, but he also knew that there are often better ways of resolving them than in court. So, instead of rolling out the red carpet to the courthouse, let's do as Mr. Lincoln said and find more ways to avoid it. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the lean entrepreneur, and of course there is indeed an idiot of the day, but I've got a couple more Stuff File news stories for you here on The Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A Fort Hood soldier has pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter, saying he shot his friend accidentally while trying to scare away his hiccups. Fort Hood officials said Sergeant Patrick Edward Myers of Spartanburg, South Carolina, was sentenced to 3.5 years in military prison. He also was busted to private and will receive a bad conduct discharge. Myers fatally shot Private First Class Isaac Lawrence Young in September while they were watching a football game at a Killian apartment. Myers told police he thought the weapon had dummy rounds and was trying to scare his friend so his hiccups would stop. Well, if you want to be technical about it, his hiccups did stop. So, there you go. And finally, police in Sacramento, California took two children aged 3 and 4 into protective custody after finding them wandering in the street alone. They quickly located their 28-year-old mother and arrested her on charges of felony child endangerment and possession of methamphetamines. Her name? Crystal Weed. Seriously, Crystal Weed. So pretty much, her parents sealed her fate 28 years ago when they named her. Anyway, on to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program. According to the authors of The Lean Entrepreneur, everyone today needs to be an entrepreneur, whether you're launching your own company or you're inside a company that you now work with. So let's talk about entrepreneurship. On the line with us right now is Brant Cooper. He's the co-author of The Lean Entrepreneur. He joins us from San Diego. Hi, Brant.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So is it true that we should all be more entrepreneurial?
Sure. I think existing businesses need to be more entrepreneurial in order to be closer to their customer and provide value. And I think that becoming an entrepreneur is a way for both those that are employed and those that are not employed to improve their life and become empowered in their in the workplace.
Are we really just taking technology and using it to actually go back a step? When you think about it, before the Industrial Revolution, before people ended up working for someone else or a large corporation, back then, basically, people had to be entrepreneurial, even from the basic farmer to the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker.
I think that's a great point. There's quite a few people that are talking about that and that the industrial age was actually the anomaly. And so you see emerging trends such as the digital fabrication, what you're able to print out with 3D printers at your home, and the type of sort of what we call mass customization that's coming about through new technology. I think that we will see a return to people focusing on taking their own responsibility for their livelihood and being able to produce products and, again, create value for people that are all around the world, but, smaller markets as an individual does, but able to provide value to people anywhere in the world.
As I mentioned in the introduction, there are basically two groups of people, those who are what we can call pure entrepreneurs and those who are actually those who should have an entrepreneurial spirit, even though they're working for somebody else. Is there a different tack that these two groups should use, or is it the same path for both of them?
Well, I think that the one going on out on their own is obviously they're their own boss. And so if you're inside of an organization, you do have a reporting mechanism there that you're going to have to respect. But I think that the idea is, again, to be empowered to make decisions, be empowered to create value for customers, and you're actually going to be, a winner inside of an organization. It's what Seth Godin calls the linchpin, right? So the linchpin of the organization is the one who can make decisions that actually increase an organization's profits and increases an organization's growth because that individual is empowered to go and make decisions that directly improve the experience of their customer. When you're out on your own, obviously you have to figure out what it is that value that you're going to create and whether you can make a living doing it. But some of the precepts that we talk about in the book, methods of interacting with your customer, running experiments to validate your ideas, and figuring out how to use data, all those methods, those principles can be used both for entrepreneurs out in the world on their own and those inside of organizations in order to move the needle of their endeavor.
Now, the title of the book is The Lean Entrepreneur, not just The Entrepreneur. So what does that really mean, The Lean Entrepreneur?
So the term lean comes from lean manufacturing, which was lean manufacturing describes the way Toyota was building cars in the 50s in Japan and continues to do so today. And the idea is really to eliminate waste. So lean doesn't mean, be small or be skinny or don't take money or don't spend money. It really means eliminating waste. And so you have what we call value-add activities where you're actually perhaps assembling a product, you're actually creating the value for that customer, and then you have non-value-add activities, and that could be that you're having to drive from one place to another in order to do your work. Now, some of the non-value-add activities are necessary, but you want to eliminate as many of them as possible, and the value-add activities you want to make as efficient as possible. So that is really the definition of lean. So in the lean entrepreneur, what we're trying to do is eliminate waste in the discovery and delivery of value for a known customer.
You and your co-writer, Patrick, you came up with this book and this concept. Was it something that you put into practice for yourself first? In other words, is this something that you've come to out of experience or just research?
Well, there's a number of ideas that have been out similar to this. Eric Ries wrote the Lean Startup book. Steve Blank wrote a book called The Four Steps to the Epiphany. And really, I as an entrepreneur working in startups have done a lot of things wrong and some things right. And it's sort of learning from those experiences that we start putting these ideas together. And really what we're going after here is a learning iterative approach to finding success. So instead of just believing what's between your ears, instead of believing in what we call the myth of the visionary, that you can, predict the future and you must just go become iconic and execute on what's between your ears. Actually, if you run small, focused experiments, you can actually figure out where the connection is between the value that you're creating, the product, and the market. And it's there. You want to discover those points and then execute. So learn first, execute second.
You say you've learned from your mistakes. Generally speaking, what are the biggest mistakes people follow or go through when going the entrepreneurial route?
So there's two things that I see most often. First is it's not really understanding the market very well. And so I think people think, too big, too broadly. And what you really want to do as an entrepreneur is figure out for your idea, for your product or service, what is the must-have use case? What is your core value proposition? And who is going to be the most passionate customer you can imagine for that particular product or service? So that you want to segment your market. You want to figure out the group of people that you're going to sell to based on the level of pain or passion that those people have. That's how you group them, not by demographics, not by age and income and gender and educational level, but rather by a group of people that share this pain or this problem or this passion, and that those people look to each other for products to address that pain or passion. So that's number one. Focus, focus, focus on this targeted group of people that share this pain. And the second thing is to think small before you get big. All big businesses started small by definition. And so you want to think of who are, literally, if you're a new entrepreneur, start with five people. Who are five people that could be passionate about this idea? And then work with them to evolve your solution. So those would be the two things. Target your market and think small before going big.
You mentioned passion a couple of times, and I would assume that it's very important to find something that you're passionate about. I mean, the old saying is, you build a better mousetrap and the world will beat a path to your door. But if you don't care about mousetraps, it's going to be problematic, isn't it?
Yeah. What is it that gets you up in the morning? What gets you excited? So, yes, I think that you need to be passionate about what you want to do, about the problem that you're trying to solve, or about the group of people that you want to serve, right? So there's a it's not only about your idea, but it's also about these people that you want to create value for. And I think that that's, you're going to find a way to make it work. So it's great for people that have a grand vision of what they see their entrepreneurial success to be, but your vision is likely going to change, and it's going to be your passion for solving the problem that's going to get you through the ups and downs of entrepreneurship.
The book is called The Lean Entrepreneur, and also I understand that you have a blog called marketbynumbers.com. What will people find when they go there?
So I've been less than prolific as I was writing the book, but basically I talk about the similar principles on my blog. So again, ways that you can interact with your customer in order to learn from them. What are their real needs? What are their desires that you can help address? And again, also, how do you run experiments? There's all these what we call viability experiments or minimum viable products, where you can do landing page tests, or you can do these Mechanical Turk tests. And so there's a volume of these experiments that you can run that help you validate your market and help you hone in on the product or service that's going to succeed in the market. And then again, it's about the data. How are you going to get your users engaged? How are you going to get them passionate about your product? And so these are the things I write about on my blog as well.
One quick question. Do you think something like entrepreneurship is something that should be taught in, say, high schools?
I do. It's not even taught well in colleges now, and there's a number of people that are changing that. But high schools very quickly should be getting on that path. If colleges don't change, and we're already seeing this, right, every year, more and more successful entrepreneurs are skipping college and they're going straight from high school. And so I don't think that it's too early at all for us to teach this stuff in high school.
The book is called The Lean Entrepreneur. I thank you very much, Brant, for taking the time to be on the program.
Peter, thank you for having me.
Brant Cooper, co-author of The Lean Entrepreneur. You can check out the website for the book and also Brant's blog by following the link on my website at thestufffile.com. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0182, and you'll find that link. You can also find the links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly. And Brant will be talking about entrepreneurship right here in Montreal and in Toronto at Grow Talks. He will be in Montreal on Tuesday, February 19th, and in Toronto 2 days later on Thursday, February 21st. Again, you'll find the links to Grow Talks on this week's What's On page on the website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Melissa Akers made several mistakes, according to police in Centralia, Washington. First, she sold several people plain table salt by convincing them it was meth, even though the two powders don't look at all alike. So she was also dealing with idiots in that regard, too. Now, according to Centralia officer Corey Butcher, people who use it know exactly what it looks like, and frankly, I'm amazed that she even tried that. Second, she sold it from her own home, and sure enough, when customers discovered they had been fooled, they returned and demanded a refund. Third, when her angry customers were pounding on her door, she called 911 to beg for help from police. And fourth, when officers arrived, they found that she was smoking marijuana with several teenage boys. Akers was charged with multiple counts of providing drugs to minors. It's hard to put into words the level of intelligence that goes along with this, Butcher said. No brains at all. Yes, no doubt about it. I mean, why would you sell fake meth from your own house, smoke up with teenage boys, and invite the cops over? One reason, and one reason only. She's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0182. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0182. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.